helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel. Yes, the United States has a history of racism. Not the one you've been led to believe where everyone everywhere was racist. See, ignoring the real history of racism is part of what's keeping it alive. During my lifetime, I saw segregation decline and become illegal. Sadly today, racism has not only survived, but seems to be growing. We're not dealing with the segregation and discrimination from the early 20th century. What we have here are those who define themselves as being victims of racism, doing everything they can, apparently, to keep it on life support. See, just as the saying goes, to a hammer, everything is a nail. Well, to a racist, everything's about race. Hello there, everyday Americans. Paul Engel here with the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution, would teach the rising generation to be free. I'm glad you could join me today. You know, this question of racism, it has an interesting dichotomy. See, on the one hand, there are people that, to the world, everything is race. And we're going to see, to me, an example of that. And there are others that are so afraid of offending someone that, well, race has almost become what the third rail of politics, right? There are certain groups that simply cannot, they're not allowed to talk about racism. And there are other groups who can talk seemingly about little else than racism. And I think what's happening is we're keeping racism alive in America because it's being promoted primarily by those who've either defined themselves by their victimhood status or those who are advancing themselves by promoting the idea of racism. Now, I'm not saying that racism no longer exists in America. I'm saying most of the racism we see in America today is actually the abused child abusing the next generation. Let me give you an example. All right, I'm going to start here with the State Department. And the State Department has a new DEI official. Now, in large part, I believe DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, is the attempt to implement racism. It's another racist idea. It says that what matters is not the quality of your skill or the quality of your character, but the color of your skin or and some other subjective term you use for yourself. The denial of reality to claim that men are women and women are men, that is more important than how good you are. We've seen DEI used to deny people a slot in a position in a school because of their ancestry. We've seen DEI used to influence who gets hired at a position, not the person with the best resume or the best history, but because of a need to check some DEI box. And yes, we've seen people silenced, not allowed to speak on campuses, not allowed to speak in public, because the DEI Gestapo says you can't talk, that you're not allowed to talk here. See, just another variation of racism. And it's being used to tear this country apart. And, you know, just as in days past, there were organizations and offices that dealt directly with the racist rules and laws. Well, now we have them here with DEI. Everybody, you know, it's this idea of we should all promote DEI. Why should I promote an idea that is inherently racist, that says race matters more than anything else? Why should I? And again, why should our State Department have an official dedicated to the idea of racial discrimination. Of, because when they talk about diversity, they're not talking about diversity of ideas, diversity of thought. They're simply talking about diversity of political political classes. You know, you have to have so many blacks and so many Asians and so many Hispanics. And, oh, by the way, you're not supposed to call them Hispanics anymore. They've decided to call them Latinx, which most Hispanics I've talked to find that ridiculously offensive, especially since the Spanish language is a gendered language, meaning words are either male or female need to be treated that way within the language. But what I find, well, not surprising, but a perfect example of this, let's keep racism on life support is, the words of this, Sakia Carr Johnson. Again, she was appointed the State Department's Chief Diversity and Inclusion Officer. Oh, wonderful. Now, recently, Fox News reported that she had written, "In every position I have held, from junior associate to senior advisor, there have been opportunities to challenge the forces that seek to silence women and those most vulnerable in society." What examples of silencing women? I'm not saying there aren't any out there, but silencing women, well, actually, no, there is. I do see a group that's attempting to silence women. It's those that are promoting the transgender agenda that come in and say, no, you can't have women's basketball or women's tennis. You have to let men compete in it. Yeah, that's silencing women. That silences women that say, no, we do not want men walking around naked in the women's locker room. That's silencing women. But I don't think that's what Ms. Johnson here is referring to. And I think it's something different. She went on to say, there are mechanisms and cultures which dispute the humanity and ability of people like me to be trusted to lead. She added that the American institutions are often riddled with racism, patriarchy, and exclusion. Well, I'll admit, I agree. Racism has re-entered America's institutions because now everybody wants your race box, you know, check a box. We need to know the color of your skin. We need to know your heritage, because that's what we're going to judge you on. We're going to determine based on your race how we treat you. But that's not the racism of the past. That's not the Jim Crow South. That's not the colored water fountains or going to the back, seating in the back of the bus. No. No, this is colleges and universities that say we're going to treat you different based on the color of your skin. No, this is not a patriarchy. It is what is the female version of patriarchy? It's a matriarchy. It's the idea that, what was it? We had to, remember when we had to believe all women? You couldn't disagree with a woman in certain cases. Well, it's the same thing. It's become a matriarchy. And that kind of fits. But this idea, again, tends to fit, I believe, with Johnson's career history. She's been a senior advisor and director of the Race, Ethnicity, and Social Inclusion Unit at the Department of State. You know, she's been very much involved in she co-authored a guide called Feminist Leaders for Feminist Goals. Isn't that a sexist way of looking at things? That's saying men have one set of goals, women have another set of goals. Men have one type of leadership, women have another type of leadership. What happened to being human? See, this guide is called a how-to playbook for feminists to usurp a culture of male and or white dominance in organizations. Oh, there are men in this organization. There are whites in this organization. How do we deal with that? See, it's not so much Bubba in his pickup truck that's judging everybody by race. It's now DEI officers in the State Department. It's admissions officers in colleges and universities. It's the race hustlers that view everything with a racial context. You know, it's funny. I used to watch a lot of NASCAR. I love auto racing. I've grown up on auto racing, and I used to watch a lot. I stopped watching NASCAR years ago because they were getting too stupid. But it was shortly thereafter when Bubba Wallace. Now, let's face it. NASCAR, mostly white drivers. There were a couple of black drivers, but let's face it, mostly white, mostly men. So a current driver, Bubba Wallace, and an okay driver. I mean, he's a better driver than I am, but he's not a top-tier driver in NASCAR. They show up at a garage at one of the tracks, and there's a pull. You know the cord they put to close the garage doors? And there was a loop in it, so you could grab it with your finger, get a little extra leverage on it, rather than, you know, trying to burn your hand on the rope. Where did his head go? Oh, it's a noose. Really? Are you telling me that someone went around and put nooses in all these garages, assuming one of them would be used by a black driver? To a hammer, everything's a nail. To a racist, everything is race. Critical race theory. Critical theory as a whole. Same scenario. See, I love when people talk about stamping out racism, but all they do is reinforce racism. And as I said, they're like the abused child. Their ancestors were treated horribly because of the color of their skin, because of their race. And that was terrible. Now they're going to do it to others. Because it was done to their parents, they're going to do it to others. And it means we never get rid of this racism. Because as long as we follow those who see everything through a racial lens, we will continue to be led by racists, which will lead us deeper and deeper into more racism. And what really gets me is when their obvious racism comes out and their derogatory racism comes out. Nobody seems to care. You know, when then candidate Joe Biden referred to a Barack Obama, candidate for president, as the first clean black man he'd ever seen run, few people said anything about that. When people complain that photo IDs, requiring a photo ID to vote, is racist because, well, obviously black people can't get, it implies that black people can't get voter IDs. Are you telling me that's too difficult a task for a black person? Isn't that the racist statement? Not the person that says, hey, everybody should be able to, everybody who can legally vote should be able to vote and be able to prove that they are the ones legally doing the voting. We don't care the color of your skin. Oh, that's racist. Really? I seem to remember a gentleman by the name of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. saying he wished for a day when his children would be judged by the content of their character rather than the color of their skin. That is not today. Because in my experience, the people that claim Martin Luther, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King as a leader are doing everything they can to prevent his dream of a colorblind society from coming true. And in fact, they even tell people that being colorblind is racist, which is about as irrational as I can think of. And of course, it's not just state departments, it's not just universities, it's businesses. Corporations have bought into this racist lie, this idea of DIE, DEI, whatever you want to call it, this we're more worried about how our workforce looks than how it actually works. And of course, that even leads into the customers they want to deal with this. They want customers that engage in the same lunacy that they do. And you know what? Too many of us are supporting these companies by buying their products. I think it's time we buy from companies that believe what we believe, that believe in equal opportunity, not equal outcome, that how much you put in will help determine how much comes out. And the only way to do that is to find companies that agree with us, like Patriot Mobile. Patriot Mobile's America's only Christian conservative wireless provider. They have the best nationwide 4G and 5G coverage on all the networks using all the same towers that the major carriers do. That means if you're getting good coverage with a carrier today, you can get the same coverage with Patriot Mobile today. They have plans that fit any budget. They are 100% U.S.-based customer support. I've used them. They are great to deal with. I was a Patriot Mobile customer before I was an affiliate with them, and I recommended them before I started doing it here on the radio. So if you want to do business with a company that supports organizations that fight for religious freedom, your constitutionally protected rights, the sanctity of life, and others, well, then switch to Patriot Mobile today. You can get free activation with the promo code Constitution. Go to patriotmobile.com/constitution. Find a plan that works for you. They have discounts for veterans, for first responders, and yes, for families that use multiple lines. That's patriotmobile.com/constitution. Be sure to use the code Constitution at checkout to get free activation. And while you're out looking around, you know, I don't know if you noticed, for a couple of days, my voice has been a little off. I wasn't feeling so great. I wasn't really sick. I just, something wasn't quite right. Well, that's when I reached for Immune Super Boost from Healthy Cell. It combines over a dozen immune supplements designed to keep my immune system going. And it comes in a travel-ready gel pack. It means it's easy to use. I simply grabbed a packet, tore it open, and drank the gel out of the packet. Or you could mix it with juice or with water. Support your immune system as you're going about your day with Healthy Cells Immune Super Boost. And since you listen to America Out Loud, you can get 25% off your first order of Immune Super Boost or anything from Healthy Cell. Simply go to AmericaOutloud.shop to find out more. You'll find the products we support. Click on one of the ads. You'll get all the details. Basically, go to HealthyCell.com. Put your cart together. When you check out, use the code OUTLOUD. Once again, go to AmericaOutloud.shop for all the details. Basically, put your order at Healthy Cell together. Use that code OUTLOUD at checkout. It lets them know that you listen to America Out Loud. And as a thank you, well, you get 25% off your first order.
Maintaining a strong immune system has never been more critical. Nutrition company Healthy Cell created Immune Super Boost to help you strengthen your immunity, unlike other supplements that don't work. Immune Super Boost is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra absorption of science-backed nutrients proven to support immunity, like vitamin C, D3, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com, code out loud. 58 million people suffer from joint aches and stiffness in the U.S. every day. Ignoring chronic joint discomfort can affect mobility and your quality of life. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created joint health and mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexible range of motion. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with clinically proven ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients. You would need to take 11 pills to get the same amount of nutrients in each gel pack. And these great-tasting gels come in a small packet. Tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. It's 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com, code out loud for 25% off.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company launched the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. The Wellness Company's chief medical board designed every supplement and medical protocol with your health in mind. From groundbreaking supplements like the Spike Support Formula to unique care like Freedom from Big Pharma. Join a healthcare system that puts your health and well-being above the interest of Big Pharma's bottom line. It's the way healthcare should be, with a company that shares your values. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
Yeah. Welcome back, everyday Americans. You rejoined the Constitution study. Today, we're talking about racism. I know it's often an uncomfortable subject. A lot of people don't want to talk about it. That's something you talk about in polite company. But let's face it, racism is on life support in this country because as actual incidents of racism has gone down, it appears people are turning anything they can into a racist incident for their own edification and promotion. And I've got a perfect example happen in Chicago. So recently, the Washington Post published a story about a 26-year-old black man in Chicago who was killed in a shootout with police last month. Now, if you read the headline, all you would know is that police fired 96 shots in 41 seconds, killing black man during traffic stop. And all across the country, people are clutching their pearls. Oh my God, another police shooting black people, because it reinforces the narrative that police are hunting down black men all across the country. But if you bothered to read, I guess it was about 8 paragraphs down, you'd find that actually they have body cam footage from multiple officers that said that this poor black man who got gunned down by police, a Dexter Reed, fired first, wounding, by the way, an officer. In fact, if you watch the body cam footage, you'll see the police, he got pulled over for a traffic stop, refused to open the door, refused to open the window, basically was ignoring police commands, and finally, yeah, he opened the door and shot at the police. Now, and of course, immediately, once we hear about a black man shot by police, you have the race hustlers. Oh, he was just out riding around in his car and they killed him for driving while black. This, by the way, was promoted by corporate media. Oh, you see, driving while black man gets shot by police, yada, yada, yada. Little, if any, mention of the fact that he actually fired first. See, according to reports, neither the CNN, USA Today, nor the Washington Post noted that Mr. Reed fired 11 rounds at the officers. That his shots not only wounded, but nearly killed an officer. But you see, the race hustlers in the media, the race hustlers among the politicians, the race hustlers among the social media, and just pay attention to me because I'm black. They're acting like this guy got pulled over for nothing, and the cops just drew down on him and kept shooting. Now, there's more to this as well. You see, the online crowdsourcing site GoFundMe, they have a fundraiser for Mr. Reed. They've raised, when was this published? April 11th. As of April 11th, they'd raised about $5,000 for Mr. Reed. Or at least I guess it would be Mr. Reed's family, since can no longer spend the money. Now, what's interesting is, anybody remember Kyle Rittenhouse? Yeah, he was the same gentleman that they shut down a fundraising platform from him back in 2020. And here's what I find interesting. See, in a statement after the Rittenhouse acquittal, they said GoFundMe's terms of service prohibit raising money for the legal defense of an alleged violent crime. Okay, so there was an alleged violent crime that Rittenhouse was charged with. He was acquitted. You have video evidence that Mr. Reed shot first. GoFundMe doesn't seem to have a problem with that. Now, here's where I talk about this being on life support, because how many millions of Americans are going to go to USA Today, CBS, NBC, The Washington Post, and who knows how many other websites, and look at the headlines? The Gannett Papers reported in their article, it ended with Reed, 26, being gunned down on a residential corner by Chicago police officers who fired nearly 100 rounds in less than a minute. Was there a mention of the fact that they were returning fire after being fired upon? By, you know, MC was, well, gee, they fired almost 100 rounds in less than a minute. Yeah, that's not that hard. I don't know how many officers are actually, there were at least several officers there. And if all of them are firing to save their lives, you can rip off quite a few rounds relatively quickly. So you've got one group that's focusing on the 96 rounds. I'm assuming they're the anti-gunners. You have the racist focusing on the fact that it was a black man that was shot during a traffic stop. And it seems to me relatively few people are focusing on the fact that Mr. Reed shot first. Mr. Reed attempted murder. He'd been pulled over for a traffic. Now, if this traffic stop was illegal, it could have been dealt with, right? You take the ticket or whatever, you go to court, fine. But he shot first. Mr. Reed shot first. Now, why do I bring this up? Because today, to this date, we still have people claiming that George Floyd was choked to death by, I can't remember the officer's name off the top of my head. Even though there's video evidence. Now, of course, they show one piece of video that shows the officer kneeling on Mr. Floyd, and it looks like he's kneeling on his neck. It could be. They completely ignore the video, the body cam video from the other side that shows that the officer's actually kneeling on his shoulder blade. We ignore that. See, that's why I talk about life support. As racist questions, you know, as racism falls out of the news, we take one thing like this. Boom, there you go. It's like the paddles, right? Clear! And here's another racial story turned into a racist narrative that's spreading around the country. Now listen, if law enforcement officers illegally shot somebody, I don't care what color their skin is. But we turn everything into these racist dialogues, these racist monologues. And all we're really doing is giving, you know, CPR to the racists, to racism. Because it sells. Let's face it, the reason that CNN, CBS, Washington Post, USA Today are framing it the way they are is because those headlines sell. They get clicks. They get people to watch. They sell. In other words, we're helped contribute to this. Rather than looking at a headline going, I know the headline is likely not quite accurate, that the truth is there later, and digging for ourselves, we got people. I heard someone the other day talking about the racist shooting. You know, the cop shot another black man for no reason in Chicago. I said, did you actually read the story? Well, no, it said so right there. I said, yeah, did you read the whole thing? Did you look at the body cam footage? There's body cam footage? Yeah, there's body cam footage. Well, I say we can't trust the media anymore because, among other things, right, not only can nothing they say be trusted, they're racist. Because making things look racist sell. But it's not just the media. Attorney General Garland spoke at the Tabernacle Baptist Church in Selma, Alabama, on the anniversary of Bloody Sunday. Okay, I have no problem with that. Absolutely none. He wants to celebrate what was a very dark day in our nation's history, that we can learn from it. I have no problem with that. But as you would be hopefully not surprised, his speech, which I'm reading the transcript from the Department of Justice, didn't take too long to turn racist. And I did a little bit of history of the segregation and racism in the South. Okay, no problem. And he pointed out that between 1965, after the passage of the Voting Rights Act, and 2006, the Justice Department was able to block more than 1,200 restrictive voting changes in jurisdictions with a history of suppressing the vote. Now, here's what's interesting. But as you well know, court decisions in recent years have drastically weakened the protections of the Voting Rights Act that marchers on the Edmund Pettus Bridge bled for 59 years ago. Why did the courts start deciding differently? Could it be that parts of the Voting Rights Act of 1965 are unconstitutional? I know they are. I've actually done some study on that. Could it be that the situations at hand didn't merit the overarching and oversight and the attacks that that the Department of Justice brought? Could it be that these decisions actually are meant to help secure the voting, making sure it's more accurate? He went on to say, and the right to vote is still under attack. Where? See, here's the interesting thing. When he talks about the right to vote, it almost seems like he's saying, well, everybody should vote whether they legally can or not. For example, photo ID requirements. That's not a large burden on voting. It doesn't prevent you to vote, and actually protects your vote to make sure that someone else isn't stealing your vote. He goes on to say, I said, the right to vote is still under attack, and that's why the Justice Department is fighting back. That is why one of the first things I did as Attorney General was to double the number of lawyers in the voting section of the Civil Rights Division. So now he's claiming that these laws are racist. Now, I find that hard to believe when most of the laws that I've seen not only say nothing about race, but actually have no logical racist component to them. Well, for example, Mr. Garland said, that is why we are challenging efforts by states and jurisdictions to implement discriminatory, burdensome, and unnecessary restrictions on access to the ballot, including those related to mail-in voting, the use of drop boxes, and voter ID requirements. What is racist about mail-in voting? About restricting mail-in voting? You know, the mail-in voting that has shown to be more open to challenge that and fraud. But the use of drop boxes, again, what is racist about? Are you telling me that drop boxes are only used in certain locations? And again, voter ID, what is racist about voter IDs? I've yet to see anybody give me any logical reason why requiring a photo ID is racist. A lot of people have a lot of ideas. They just make no sense. Are you telling me that Black people are incapable of getting a photo ID? Are you telling me that Black people, it's a burden to get a free voter ID? That's the only requirement I have ever expected of any voter ID laws, is that you must be able to acquire an ID for free. And as far as I know, every voter ID law, you either have use a driver's license, which, are you telling me Black people have a hard time getting driver's licenses? Or there is a voter ID card that you can get at no cost. But you see, Merrick Garland apparently is a racist. Because in his mind, the only reason to look at the dangers of mail-in voting is because of race. Same with drop boxes, same with voter IDs. So when he says, that is why we are working to block the adoption of discriminatory redistricting plans that dilute the vote of Black voters and other voters. Here's actually one spot where I might actually agree with Mr. Garland in concept, if not in action. Redistricting has become a political nightmare. I don't know that they're being used to dilute the vote, Black vote. I haven't seen examples of that. But being, it appears to Mr. Garland that everything is racist, I have to beg the question, is it that the redistricting is racist, or that in his mind, everything is racist? Or is it even more crass than that? Being that Mr. Garland is in front of a probably largely Black group at this Selma event, that he's just pandering to the crowd. That he's just whipping up their sense of victimhood their belief that they are being discriminated against, whether it actually happens or not, is he whipping up their racist tendencies just to get their support? Probably their support for his boss, right? Mr. Biden. Yeah, there's an old saying, you know, when dealing with a problem, the solution that requires the fewest assumptions is probably correct. I don't think Mr. Garland is actually racist. I think much more likely is he is crass enough to use race and racism to shill for his boss. And a lot of people fall for it. And not just black folk. I know, I see a lot of white folk that believe this as well. I believe because it seems every time we see the talk about racism wane, all of a sudden there's somebody else to whip up the talk of systemic racism without any evidence that the system is actually racist. And what's interesting is by doing so, they ignore the probably small percentage of people who actually are racist. And they actually feed, I should say, that are racist against blacks, while at the same time feeding an ever-growing racism by blacks against everyone else, especially against whites, against Christians, and against men. Now, I'm coming up on another break. Before I go, though, I want to remind you, I'm still looking for questions. I love answering questions here on the radio. So if you have a question, don't be shy. Head to constitutionstudy.com/questions and fill out the form and check the checkbox that says you want me to answer on the radio. I'm sure there are other people that have that same question. I just need someone to ask it so I can answer it. Also, while you're out and about, check out AmericaOutloud.news. In fact, visit there every day, just like I do. I find podcasts and videos that teach me things. I see stories and articles that I can share. And it's important that we do. So join me not just in visiting AmericaOutloud.news, but sharing all that information, the stories, the podcasts, the videos, so we can share in the blessings of liberty.
Many voices, one freedom, united in the First Amendment. Our goal is to herald the voice of genuine liberty at AmericaOutloud.news, a place where you'll find the naked truth expressed with a patriotic heart. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit HealRight.com/outloud or AmericaOutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
The Wellness Company shares your values and fights for medical freedom. They put patients before profits and follow medical science, not political science like doctors on the left. Their chief medical board, which includes Dr. Peter McCullough, are the makers of the incredible American-made high-quality spike formula. If you worry about spike proteins, go to twc.health and use promo code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount. Once again, that's twc.health, promo code OUTLOUD.
I'm so confused. I don't know what to do.
I'm afraid of going to the hospital.
My doctor tells me nutrition doesn't work.
Trust is earned. We are the Energetic Health Institute, and we want to earn your trust. Natural medicine, holistic nutrition, detoxification, fasting, cellular healing, and so much more. Remember, the best way to be free is to be healthy. So stop being a patient and start being a student at energetichealthinstitute.org.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. I know we've been talking about racism, but I want to kind of shift gears. I want to shift gears for the last segment of the program. I want to start with an interesting story. I watched a video. It's up on Rumble. It's from Tenet Media. It's got a gentleman by the name of Matt Christensen, and he's talking about a proposed ordinance in the city of San Francisco. It's being proposed by one of their city supervisors involving grocery stores.
Preston has now revived a proposed city ordinance that nearly became law in the 80s, but was too radical for the city back then. So mayor at the time, Dianne Feinstein, vetoed it, calling it an unnecessary intrusion of governmental regulatory authority. Preston has rebranded it as the Grocery Protection Act, and if passed by the Board of Supervisors and approved by the mayor, it would require grocery stores to give the city 6 months' notice on any planned closure and to work with the city in good faith to find a way to keep the business open or to find a replacement or else.
Now, again, this is San Francisco, so I kind of expect weird and stupid. And the idea is to have an ordinance that says, listen, if you're a grocery store, you are subservient to the city. The city has the right to, coerce you to remain open. Now, this has been this is a response to Safeway, which planned to close one of their stores. I guess they're the major grocery chain out there, and because they're losing money left, right, and center, and they're losing it for a lot of different reasons. Right, some of it is probably just business and traffic. Some of it's got to be, the cost of the building. Some of it, the fact that since San Francisco refuses to enforce law, they're losing money left, right, and center to theft. In fact, there was actually a video clip of they put the bags of coffee behind lock and key because it was getting stolen so often. So Safeway says, "Hey, you know, we've had enough. We're leaving," and the city convinced them to hang around for a while, see if they could come up with something. And now you have this supervisor that's planning this little ordinance that says, listen, you don't have a choice. If you're going to close, you have to give us 6 months notice so we can work a way out of it. Kind of like, well, as if Safeway were the employee of the city in San Francisco. Now, Mr. Christensen mentioned an or else. What is this or else?
This new ordinance will empower people to sue them. San Francisco residents affected by the closure would have legal authorization to take the store to court for damages. They will sue you into business by threatening to take whatever you have left if you leave.
Boy, this sounds an awful lot like maybe East Germany. I mean, we're not talking about building the Berlin Wall, but are we going to have the legal San Francisco Wall? Once you do business here, you must keep doing business, and if we tell you to, or else. How, I have to ask you, how is a city resident damaged by the closure of a store? They may be inconvenienced, but they don't. The damage is not the store. It didn't damage them. The store has been damaged and is leaving. It's the arrogance of your business is not yours. It belongs to the community. It's the collectivist idea. And of course, San Francisco, shouldn't be surprised, they don't believe in private property. That business, Safeway, doesn't belong to the shareholders of the corporation. No. It belongs to the city of San Francisco. And San Francisco will decide whether or not you can leave. And if you leave without our approval, we'll just sick our citizens after you and put you out of business in lawsuits. Now, I would hope that any such lawsuit would be dead on arrival. But then again, this is San Francisco. This is the Ninth Circuit's Court of Appeals. Who knows what they're going to come up with? The very idea that a city, now again, would the city say, hey, please let us know. We'd like to be able to backfill. We'd like to find a way of doing this. please let us know ahead of time so that we can come up with some sort of preparations for our citizens. Asking is one thing. Demanding, threatening lawsuits is something else. This is coercion. This is intimidation. This is extortion. This is you will do things our way or else. Not because you broke a law, but because we don't like the fact that you're leaving, even though it is our policies that are basically putting you out of business. But we shouldn't be surprised. We shouldn't at all be surprised. This is San Francisco. In California. Anybody remember Prop 22? The idea in California that you no longer get to decide if you're going to work as an employee or as a freelancer. California knows better than you. You must jump through our hoops to work freelance. Again, this is California. All right, Hollyweird. This is the place that lives by the gig economy. Hollywood is all about these freelancers. You know, you're doing a movie. You don't take employees of the studio. You hire freelancers to do the lighting and the camera work and the writing of the scripts. Everything is freelance. And they came up with this brilliant idea. And you know what it did? It drove people out of the state. So it was such a great idea. Guess what? The Department of Labor just released 300 pages of new quote-unquote regulations to tell you whether or not you're not a contractor, you are a payroll employee. In other words, we are going to take away from you the opportunity to be a freelancer because we think you should really be an employee, and if you don't like it, tough. I believe it was Assemblywoman Gonzalez talking about the law in California and said, when you have to take a side job or a third or fourth gig, that's not flexibility. That's feudalism. That's baloney. What if that's how you want to work? Little jobs, side jobs, gig jobs. The assumption that you know what's best for people. The assumption that you have the right to take away their choices. We saw what happened in California, and now they're doing it in the U.S., the Department of Labor. Now, I want to blow this up for you. Because I want to point something out, right? Do me a favor. If you've got it, pick up your Constitution. Turn to Article 6, Clause 2. Right? Follow me. Article 6, Clause 2, the Supremacy Clause, reads, "This Constitution and the laws of the United States shall be made in pursuance thereof, and the treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby, anything in the laws or constitution of the state to the contrary, notwithstanding." So we have three things that are supreme law. The Constitution, the laws of the United States made pursuant to the Constitution, meaning they have to follow the Constitution, and the treaties made under the authority of the United States, which comes from the Constitution. Do you know what's not in that list? A Labor Department regulation. Doesn't exist. No executive rule or regulation is the supreme law. It is not the supreme law of the land. Let me say that one more time. These regulations are not the supreme law of the land. And the judges in every state are bound to the Constitution, which says these are not the supreme law, meaning every judge, when a case comes up regarding these regulations, should simply throw it out. Oh, but wait, there's more. See, if you go back to Federalist 78, Alexander Hamilton, an unconstitutional act is void. By the way, this was supported by Marbury versus Madison, Ex parte Siebold, Norton v. Shelby County, three Supreme Court cases that recognize that unconstitutional acts are void. Remember that little thing out of the Supremacy Clause? Laws of the United States made pursuant thereof? The 10th Amendment says that a power not delegated to the United States by the Constitution doesn't belong to the United States. Guess what? Regulating labor is not a power delegated to the United States. Therefore, the law, the quote-unquote law, the act that created the Department of Labor was not made pursuant to the Constitution, meaning it was not the supreme law of the land, and according to Alexander Hamilton and at least three Supreme Court cases, is void. I want every one of you to take that, to listen to that, to take that, the supremacy clause. I want you to go to your state regulators. I want you to go to state legislators. I want you to go to your governor. I want you to go to your state Department of Justice, your state attorney general. And I want you to point out these regulations are void. They were not, they're not law. They're not the supreme law. You have no, you are not legally bound to these regulations. And anybody who points out, well, the Congress created the Department of Labor, it gave them power, they had no authority to. It was a violation of the 10th Amendment. That law is void. We need to educate the people we ask to represent us to their true power and say, stuff it. Not simply because if we let this Department of Labor usurpation of powers continue, it will help destroy our economy. Think of all the Uber and Lyft drivers and the people who work freelance photographers, freelance newspaper writers, freelance anything. You're telling me I can't work as a freelance because the government says I can't. I worked in IT for 30 years. You're telling me I couldn't go back and do some freelance consulting work because the government says I must be a payrolled employee. Right? That is antithetical to liberty and justice for all. It is antithetical to the land of the free. And we must be brave enough to stand up against it. And we start by educating our representatives on this. If you need help, reach out. I'll do what I can. I've got documentation. I've got proof. I have a placard that I used for... we'll call them other ordinances, unconstitutional ordinances. Just go to constitutionstudy.com and search for Knowing Your Rights placard. You'll find it. Because we need to know our rights, because these people are not out to protect our rights. They're out to destroy our rights. Yeah, I said it. They're out to destroy our rights. See, they either don't think you're smart enough to decide whether you want to work for yourself as a freelancer, or work as an employee, that you're not smart enough to look at your life and decide which would be better for me right now. They don't believe that you have the intelligence. They don't believe that you have the right. They believe they get to tell you how to live your life. We are over 100 years down this socialistic, communistic, collectivist, dictatorial way of thinking. So I know when I say things like this, people think I'm nuts. But I just showed you what the Constitution said. And I didn't simply say, well, this is what I say. I pointed out, hey, wait a second. This is what Alexander Hamilton said. This is what multiple Supreme Courts have said. What I'm saying is not radical. It's only thought to be radical because we have not been taught the truth for so many decades. To the point where when the truth stares you right in the face, most people won't believe it. I hope you're not one of them. I hope you look at this and go, wow, I never thought of it that way. Can it possibly be true? How could I find out more? How could I improve my studying to do better, to learn more about this? That's why I created the Constitution Study, because I believe all of us should be reading and studying the Constitution, that all of us should know our rights and be prepared to defend and assert them. But not everybody's going to do things the way I do. That's fine. Maybe you're looking for a little guidance, a little bit of help. Go to constitutionstudy.com/wizard. I created this planning wizard. After I got asked for the who knows how many times, you know, what should I do next? That's why I created the wizard. Simply, you know, answer a few questions. Yes, I asked for your name and your email address, but answer a few questions. When was the last time you read the Constitution? How hard was it? Did you find it difficult or not? Do you have any plans? Are you interested in studying? Are you interested in teaching? Fill that out and submit it. Now, I review each and every one of them, but the system will look at your answers and it will start generating emails with ideas based specifically on your answers. And it's there to help you have an idea of how you can move further. I have people who say they'd love to come hear me teach more. Well, the problem is I live outside of Nashville, Tennessee. It's actually hard for me to go everywhere people would like me to go. But I do Zoom events. If you'd like to have a Zoom event, if I come speak to your group, and we can do it via Zoom, we can do that. And we can help teach people that way. Or even better, if I can help teach you how to teach others, that's even better. The point is, we get stuck in this mostly out of our own ignorance and our own apathy. And part of what I'm trying to do is show you, you don't have to be apathetic. You don't have to just sit there and take it. That we can break the apathy with a little bit of education. And that's what I'm trying to do here, and that's what I'm willing to help you do as well. You know, Trump talks about make America great again. I talk about make America free again. Because if the government can tell you whether or not you're an employee or a freelancer, you're not free. You're a slave. You're a subject. You're a vassal. If we wish to be the land of the free, we have to be brave enough to seek the truth and then put it into action. And that's what we're trying to do here. Now, hopefully you also come back and you'll listen to the Constitution Study every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard on the iHeartRadio Network. Every episode also goes to podcast, generally a day or two after it's heard on talk radio. You can listen through your favorite podcast app, but do me a favor. Subscribe to the show. Leave me ratings and reviews, especially on Apple Podcasts. It helps other people who are searching for this information to find the Constitution Study. And let's face it, we certainly want more people to find out at least what we're saying here and then examine to see if it's true or not. You can help by sharing the word. You can find all the links you need at the homepage at AmericaOutloud.news. But I do ask you to share this. You know, I can't tell you how many times people have said, "Ooh, I wish I knew about you a week ago or a month ago when this information would have been helpful." You can help by spreading this information, by taking those links and sharing them. Take this knowledge, take this opportunity. Share the Constitution Study, share America Out Loud, share the news that can help us return to the land of the free if we are brave enough to share this and share the blessings of liberty.